global trends such as urbanization, digitalization, or changing economic patterns put increasing stress on the use and management of water resources. However, they may also come along with opportunities for increased water sustainability. Identifying and assessing the emerging challenges and opportunities is becoming ever more important in order to ensure water security and sustainable water systems in the future. The Trend Observatory on Water of the Swiss Agency for Development Cooperation, in short SDC, informs SDC's water network Réseau and all interested parties about important emerging trends and innovative approaches.
Hello and welcome to the podcast series of SDC's Trend Observatory on Water. I am your host, Annika Kramer. I am head of the water program at Adelphi, a Berlin-based think tank implementing the Trend Observatory for SDC. In this episode, on occasion of the UN Food Systems Summit, we are going to talk about the importance of water in supporting food security. We will highlight recent trends in the global food systems that impact sustainability of water resources, and also provide some insights on how food security may still be achieved. For this discussion, we have invited Professor Stefan Uhlenbrock. He is Program Director of the Research Program on Water, Land and Ecosystems of the Consultative Group on International Agricultural Research, as well as Strategic Program Director on Water, Food and Ecosystems at the International Water Management Institute. Before taking his current position, Stefan was coordinator of the World Water Assessment Program. He is hence an expert on the current state of global water resources and the complex interlinkages it has with food systems. Welcome, Stefan. Great to have you as our guest for the first episode of our Trend Observatory podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Stefan, the UN Food Systems Summit took place 2 weeks ago, and it had raised high expectations in the global community. You yourself were part of a scientific expert group that formulated an input paper for the summit on the topic of water for food systems and nutrition. Why is water so important for food systems?
Well, in general, you know, water is absolutely critical for food systems. A large part of the water withdrawals are used in agriculture. Globally, we estimated that about 70% of the water that we take out of the water system is used for agriculture. And in some agrarian economy, it can be as much as 90% and more that is used for agriculture. So water is absolutely critical for food production. Without water, we can break any food system. Water is absolutely essential as an ingredient.
Thank you. I think you made really clear how crucial healthy water systems will also then be for eradicating hunger worldwide. Now, looking back at the UN Food Systems Summit, do you think that the message of your input paper has been heard?
Honestly, it's difficult to say, but of course, we hope so. But it's interesting to look at the whole volume of the scientific background papers. In total, it has 25 papers and some 500 pages. Our paper had 10 pages. And so out of 500, 10 pages directly dealt with water. All the other papers were about other aspects of the food systems that are also very important, like hunger, nutrition, equity, gender aspects, etc., etc. And while our 10 pages dealt with water directly, we felt that is very important. And we were happy that it was included into that publication. And often I believe that people don't even realize how absolutely critical water is also for all the other aspects, including hunger and nutrition, but also climate change and its impacts on water and food security. Overall, well, we still feel water is not sufficiently considered. However, it was very good to see that some 20 countries mentioned water in their country statements. Furthermore, quite a number of so-called coalitions were set up during the UN FSS, the UN Food Systems Summit, and a number of these coalitions directly or indirectly deal with water. There's the Land and Freshwater Coalition, but there's other coalitions that also indirectly deal with water, like the one on deforestation and conversion-free supply chains, the one on agroecology. There's one on school meals for all school students, and also one on climate resilient development pathways. And water is absolutely critical for climate resiliency. On the Land and Freshwater Coalition, which I believe is very exciting to see, it really depends on what will be the future impact. You know, how much ownership will be there from the countries and from other stakeholders? What's the work plan? And last but not least, what is the funding that is put into that coalition to really make a difference?
Yeah, thanks for sharing your perspective on this. It's good to hear that the value of water and also the systems that are interdependent with it are increasingly getting recognized, even though there's still a long way to go, I think. Now, looking at how the food system also impacts on water security and water systems, which of the current trends in food systems do you consider most critical in terms of their potential negative effects on water resources sustainability?
That's a very good question. And overall, there's different predictions that we need to increase the overall food production by 40 to 50%. There's different numbers floating around by 2050. So that means a very significant increase of the food production. And that will require more resources, more water, more nutrients, more fertilizer, more energy, more labor, if we stay at the same efficiency level. So I said it already. So if we need more resources to produce that increased food, we have to think about how do we become more efficient with the current resources that we have. Interesting is also that we observe globally a change in the diets. But in general, what we see is if people become more wealthy, they also change their diet, which is good. They have more food security, and they also tend to increase their consumption of more processed food, which often has a higher environmental footprint, a higher water footprint. And we also see that the meat consumption is increasing. Meat is also a product which is rich in protein and has many good aspects. I understand that. But on the other hand, it has a very high water and environmental footprint. For instance, if you produce a kilogram of beef, there's different estimates for that, but up to 15 cubic meters of water are needed for that production. So it requires more water. It requires other environmental resources to satisfy this change of diet.
I see. I think those numbers on the amount of water that is used for meat production are indeed worrying if we think of the growing populations worldwide and their changing diets, as you said. I think one aspect that is often overlooked are also the impacts on water quality that come with increased meat production, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And particularly in the way the majority of the meat is produced, which is highly productive systems where we use a lot of agrochemicals, that meaning fertilizer or pesticides for the fodder production. We also use a lot of medicine or grow accelerators, hormones, antibiotics to ensure that this high production can be realized. And these antibiotics, hormones, etc., they will spread through the water cycle, either through the wastewater, which is insufficiently cleaned or not cleaned at all. And that, of course, is spreading then all these hormones and antibiotics and causing significant threat to the environment, but also to the people. Because what happens if we use a lot of antibiotics is that the bacteria, the viruses, the fungi, they change over time. They adapt to this antibiotic load and they become more and more resistant against the antibiotics that we have. And that means that patients cannot be cured or need to stay longer in hospital, have increased costs for that. And also we can observe increased mortality.
Wow, these long-term effects sound really alarming. And then in addition to the enormous amount of water that's being used, so the water quality impacts will actually exacerbate the water scarcity and the limited water resources available for the food system. Do you still see a chance to meet the growing demand for food?
As usual, there's always two sides of that medal. Overall, I need to say, yes, we can produce enough food for the whole world. And even in 2050, when we probably have some 10 billion people on the planet, we can produce enough calories. That is true. And on the other hand, I do not want to marginalize the problem of food insecurity. While globally we can create food security, locally it can be very dramatic and can be very insecure because of droughts, for instance. Often they are accompanied by pests and diseases that destroy a harvest. Or think about conflict situations where access to food is just problematic, or for refugees who don't have access. So locally, it can be very food insecure, but globally, we can produce enough calories. It's just a question of better governance and better distribution of the food. One aspect that is too often ignored is actually, it's not only about food security, it's about food and nutrition security. Nutrition is absolutely important and often underestimated, but poor quality of the diets are a key driver for malnutrition, and they are associated with 11 million premature adult deaths every year. It's about a fifth of all the premature adult deaths are related to poor diets. Either we have too little food or not enough proteins or micronutrients, and globally still some 800 million people are hungry. Also, this is a number that unfortunately is increasing, is escalating over the last 1.5 years because of the COVID crisis. Or we have too much food, too much of the wrong food, you know, too much sugar, too much fat, and almost 2 billion people are either overweight or obese, which is another major health issue. And we estimated from the CJR that about 3 billion people cannot afford a healthy diet back in 2019. And unfortunately, it's predicted that next year, by the end of 2022, another 250 million are expected to be added to this number of 3 billion people. So they are not able to afford a healthy diet due to the COVID situation.
Thanks for sharing those numbers. It's really stunning to see the level of malnutrition and the impacts it has. But in general, you painted a positive picture. So that's good news that in theory, we can feed the world. But how about the water resources? Can we conserve the remaining water resources while producing ever-increasing amounts of food?
Our demand for water resources is escalating. And as we said before, about 70% globally of the withdrawals go to agriculture. So we need to become more efficient in the way we use water. Of that high number of water withdrawals, it's largely going to the irrigation of the agriculture. And irrigation is a great thing, and it really can increase food and nutrition security. It can make us more adaptive and less vulnerable to climate change. So it's really a very important development. But we have to think about the irrigation technology and the way we share the water for irrigation, if that can be not done more efficient. And therefore, what we learned from our research programs is that it is important to look at the technology that we apply at the field scale and look at how can we do that more efficiently. But also think not only about the field scales, think about the whole river basin. So what are the main users of water? What are the uses like industrial use, energy sector, or domestic uses? And then look at the whole basin and try to understand how much water do we actually have and how much can we use for consumption and how much we better conserve for the environment and for other uses. And then we need to set these limits, but it's important to not only look locally at a given groundwater system or surface water system, but really have this larger picture in mind and think about the basin scale and do not think that also local savings necessarily translate to larger scales. It really needs a bigger picture approach that considers all the sectors as well as spatially the whole basin. And then we need to plan and manage the water consumption to actually really save water for the environment.
Thanks. That's interesting. Can you share a success story of water conservation or of adopting one of the approaches that you mentioned that need to be taken?
Yes, there's quite a number of success stories. And water technology is one of the answers, but we have to apply particular high-tech technology very carefully in understanding the whole systems, including the people and the use patterns. But water efficiency technologies, for instance, having more efficient irrigation technology through, for instance, drip irrigation or solar irrigation, which helps pumping water to the irrigation fields. Now, these are different technologies that can help save water, but solar irrigation also can be a dangerous thing. Dangerous in terms of it's great to invest in a solar pump and then be able to pump water. And after the investment into the solar pump, the additional costs to keep on pumping water are little or even negligible. So there's a big danger that people over-irrigate because they invested already in a solar pump. And then or as long as there's water to pump, they pump, and there's a big danger to over-irrigate and not be very careful with the overall application of irrigation water. So it shows technology can be great, but you have to apply it in a wise way and in a well-informed way. Other examples which I may mention in this context is that we are working with the FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN, on mapping water productivity. It's the amount of water used to produce food. And ideally, we want to produce more crop per drop, as a simplified statement. And to map that globally, we use satellite information to map the agricultural water use and also compare that with other land uses. And that helps us to assess agricultural water use. There we collaborate with the FAO as well as with IHE Delft in the Netherlands. And we believe this monitoring, is it at global scale? So far, we do Pan-Africa scale and in different countries at final resolution as up to 30 meter resolution for specific areas. We believe this is very important because only what you measure is also something that you can manage. Yeah? And something that you don't measure is hardly conserved, is hardly managed very carefully. So therefore, we believe continuous monitoring is very important.
Okay, thanks. And it seems that there's some hope with those recent advancements in understanding and also the new technologies that can be applied to increase water productivity. But also looking at what you mentioned before, the facts about nutrition, it seems that major change is needed not only in the way how we use water, so how efficient we use it, but also what water is used for in order to ensure water and food security. So to me, it sounds like we really need some kind of major transformation. Where do you see potential entry points to get this transformation started?
Thanks, Annika. This is the $1 billion question. Probably there's many entry points to that question. And one is, and I think in your question, you partly, for me, gave you already one of the answers, and that's the need for more integrated approaches. So we need to widen our scope from looking at agricultural production to food systems, where we look at the production part of the food, but also the processing, the redistribution, the consumption, including the preparation of the food and so on, that all that the whole system needs to be considered in their water use. So it's not only in the field scale. So having this bigger picture for water quantity and quality, and also having that bigger picture for all the other inputs, is it nutrients or seed systems or labor, et cetera, et cetera. Only then we can realize real gains. Interesting, at the UN Food Systems Summit, this was also realized by quite a number of member states, and several mentioned that food need to be seen in a bigger picture. So that I was happy to see it's the UN Food Systems Summit, not only the UN Agricultural Summit. And quite a number of member states mentioned the triple challenge of water, energy, and food, and the interdependencies of these different systems. And last but not least, what is a key entry point for me, I spoke a lot about technology today, but it's a lot about governance. It's about being able to govern our water, food, energy systems wisely, govern them in an integrated fashion with not contradicting or incoherent policies, but with a policy framework that makes sense, that is supporting each other, that looks at realizing the gains between the different systems and trying to understand the trade-offs and manage them in a proactive way. And that needs good governance, good oversight, good legislation to be able to manage that at the long term.
Yeah, thanks. It's good to see that some of the countries at the UN Food Systems Summit already started recognizing the need for a more integrated approach. Do you already see some initiatives in that direction that are going on?
Yes, there's things moving. Yeah, so that's very positive. So I remain overall optimistic. And for example, recently the USAID pledged, if I got it right from the press, $10 billion and committed that to address issues of global food insecurity. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, almost $1 billion to invest in nutrition. Quite a number of the European typical donor countries, including Switzerland, but also the European Union, quite a number of others also invest significantly into the CGIAR, which is the Agricultural Innovation and Research Framework, to generate the necessary knowledge, to generate the necessary innovations to really drive that systems transformation. So that is all very positive news.
Thank you very much, Stefan, for sharing your views and insights with us and also for leaving us with a bit of a hopeful picture. I think that's a good message to send out. Thank you very much.
Thanks, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
If you would like to learn more about the topic of today's podcast and other important trends for the water sector, check out our Trend Observatory on Water website. You will find the link in the description. Thank you for tuning in and goodbye.